I'll be too nervous to. I'll probably be lost for words.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the DraftKings podcast. I'm joined, as ever, by my co-host, Matt Vincenzi. Matt, hello.
Tom, big week ahead. I'm really excited for it.
It's a big event, right? It's an exciting event. Probably the one tournament so far this year where I feel really excited to watch it. It couldn't have come at a worse time, really busy week, but looking forward to it nonetheless. Did we learn anything last week that's going to help us?
Well, we learned something that it's not going to help me, but it might help somebody out there, that Scottie Scheffler, if he putts the way he putts, not that it's a surprise to anybody, but he's going to win by five shots. So hopefully Rory getting him to use that spider wasn't going to change as much as it seems like it would after 1 week.
Yeah, I think it's funny, isn't it? It's always the case of like, oh, if he just putts, he's going to win. And it feels so anecdotal, right? And we've sort of slammed that in the past. And, you know, every time I hear someone say, oh, well, if he putts like this every single time, he's going to win, I get a little bit like, yeah, but it's not going to happen. But literally every single time he's gained like four strokes putting, he's won every time. Like,
yep.
And he was 16 out of 16 from 15 feet on Sunday. Just outrageous. He did try this spider putter recently, right? This isn't completely new to him.
No, it's slightly different. One of them had like a milled face in the insert, and one didn't, but pretty much.
But he had the bigger putter as opposed to the blade, right?
Yeah.
Like he's tried a mallet before, right? But it's weird that like Rory McIlroy tells him to go and try a mallet putter or a spider putter, and suddenly he wins by whatever, four or five, whatever it was. Like, it's not great for everybody else. But I don't know, like. Go on, you go.
It's not great for Rory either. I mean, did you see what McGinley said today?
No.
So he didn't say anything about that specifically, but it seems like it makes a lot of sense. He said he thinks that he's too nice, and he said everybody seems to be friends, and I think Rory is at his best when he's got an edge. And then he said, you can be friends with them, but don't give them an edge. Napoleon had a great line about never interrupt your enemies when he's making a mistake. And maybe I've got a hard-nosed feeling about it, but it's a tough game. I would keep those little nuggets to yourself.
Which is true, right? Because when he was... So he dealt with Liv, right? And he was the spokesperson. He took his eye off the ball. He speaks about it. Didn't play good golf. We all knew why it was happening. Gets absolutely shit on by the PGA Tour. Gets used as a sacrificial lamb, I think he said. All of a sudden, he comes out absolutely firing, playing some of his best golf again. It is like he needs that little edge and that little chip on your shoulder to perform. And then all of a sudden you go, okay, well, Scotty, if you just do this, you can win. It's a bit of a weird... Like, I don't suppose he expects to just be like, oh, you're going to go and win straight away by four as soon as I say it. But unless he's doing it to kind of almost put his own back up against the wall, like, okay, well, Scotty's playing like this, so I need to now match it. Like, I think that Brooks Koepka does that. Like,
yeah, but... I think, to in a sense, McGinley's spot on. Where would Tiger ever say something?
No, to help exactly. I mean, he's reluctant to do it now, right? Like, he won't even give people hints now. I think JT's in the inner circle, and Rahm always talks about how like he's the only one he's ever really given advice to, and all that sort of stuff. Interesting point. I think you counted it actually on Twitter about if Scotty Scheffler was playing during Tiger's pomp, like he wouldn't have won as much. And we said like we kind of quickly forget about Vijay Singh and David DeVoe and things like that, and I think you shared the data golf numbers on it. The thing with Tiger is he just putted all that time, right? Like, it wasn't just in short bursts like Scheffler does. Like, he was Scheffler but with the putting all the time as well. So I think people need to sort of remember how dominant he was, and we kind of forget that. Like, I think there's just such a recency bias. Like, we're essentially saying that David DeVoe, BJ Singh, Phil Mickelson, Jim Furyk, Davis Love the Third, whoever, like, you want to chuck these players in. Are we saying they don't match up to Scheffler, Rahm, Hovland, Max Homer, and all this now? Like, it's all kind of much for a muchness, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's, to me, it's almost the opposite. Like, what if, I mean, right now, Scotty's competition is extremely weak. And not necessarily just the majors, but in a week-to-week basis. I mean, I'm not going to say the Taylor Gooch asterisk comment, but is a win at Riviera, a win at Bay Hill all the same when you have no DJ Brooks, Rahm, Cam, Neiman, like Bryson? You're missing a lot of guys. I mean, Bryson tore a party at PI a couple of years ago, and you're missing a lot of these really good players. And none of the players that are on the top of the PGA Tour, with the exception of Scheffler, are playing well.
But let's even play devil's advocate right here, Matt. Because I think obviously the first thing people are going to level at us when they listen to this is, are they just going to, you know, be pro live and they're naming those players and maybe they don't make a difference, right? But let's just say it wasn't that they got purely from a numbers point of view, losing that many good golfers anywhere. Like if Morikawa, Homer, Rory, and so-and-so were injured, let's say, it's still the same principle, right? Like if you're not competing against the best of the best for whatever reason or whatever, I mean, like Patrick Harrison won two or three majors in 2 years, right? Because Tiger Woods was injured during that time. Like it literally happens. People have to take advantage of these windows, and Scottie Scheffler's doing that now. Like no one's really, I was thinking about this the other day, man, like when I was looking at the Masters, I don't think anyone's really staked their claim for the Masters yet until Scheffler did the weekend.
No, I mean, that's why I think, and again, I'm as pro PGA Tour as anybody. I don't hate live like other people do, but I love all the players in the PGA Tour. It's just a fact that none of them are really playing great right now. I want them to play great. I want Victor Hovland to be a runner at the Masters, but these events coming up, Players, Masters, you have to be in good form to win them. You can't just show up there in half-ass form and win. So right now, it seems like it's going to be Scheffler against potentially, I mean, I think the live guys probably have the best chance to stop him.
Yeah, I think this is one of the things, right? Like, I think we saw it last year that everyone was sort of saying, oh, the players are going to come in undercooked, like the live players are coming undercooked for Augusta. They've not played enough. Well, you know, warming up in Florida is not the right thing. And then you look back at how people are prepared, and because of the difference in schedule now, it's not been as easy to prepare for the Masters as it probably was in years gone by. And the move to the players being in March again since 2019 has bred a lot of good winners, but it doesn't necessarily lead to success in the Masters, right? So is there a right and wrong way to prepare? I don't know, but there's certainly a wrong way to prepare, and that is what they're doing right now. Like none of them are really, I mean, Hovland has been brutally disappointing. I thought he was going to be potentially world number one this year, and he's just gone completely the opposite way. And I guess like Hideki, minus his injuries, has been pretty impressive. Zalatoris has been pretty impressive since he came back. I bet on Sam Burns for the Masters. I think he's going to struggle to get in contention, but I thought value-wise, based on how well he's been playing, I thought that looked okay. But even like Thomas, who we were expecting to have a big year, hasn't really done it. Xander, Cantlay, you know, it is a weak kind of, you know, competition, I guess, at the moment. So it can't be denied. You haven't watched Full Swing yet, have you?
I've watched the first three or four episodes. I like it a lot better this season than last season.
A lot of people have said that. What? Why? Why do you like it better?
So I only watched the first few, but I like seeing the majors. That's what I like the best. So I thought the first one, when there was a lot of Brooks and Rory, I thought that one was really awesome, showing Rory's frustration with not winning, him and Brooks playing that practice round together. I thought that was awesome. The Damon stuff, I'm kind of over it. And how many times did Damon refer to himself as famous in that episode?
Yeah, I think so. There was two lines of thinking with Damon. To a point, right, I was getting quite frustrated that I thought you need to be like, I'm quite pessimistic and self-loathing as a character, right, in a jokey way, and I think that's what he's like, so I can kind of say identify with him. That sounds really like pathetic, but in that kind of respect, I understand.
You can relate.
Like,
yeah
like I can relate to that kind of character, right? But he went about two or three times too far, to the point where Gino was fucking infuriated, right? And I think like if he was pissed off, then like you've got a problem. And look, I think there was a lot of, in the end, by the end of the episode, I come around because I think there was a lot of self-sabotage in there that is deeply rooted in the problems that he had in his, you know, younger years and the loss he had and all those sort of things. Like, I can't begin to imagine what that means. So I can't relate to that in that sense. But it was like the reluctance to kind of get a sports psychiatrist, even though I thought that it was really well done, then putting him next to Wyndham Clark in the episode, showing the benefits of having one. Very smart. I enjoyed the first series. I think the first series was dumbed down a little bit too much for the general public, which is kind of what the point was. It's what they did with Drive to Survive as well, and I kind of appreciated it in that, so I get why people would engulf. This time around, it felt like it played more into the kind of hardened fans a little bit more. I didn't necessarily enjoy it that much more. Have you watched the... So the I didn't like Justin Thomas at all.
I haven't got to that yet, I don't think.
So you haven't seen him at the PGA?
No.
Okay, so we'll discuss that when that comes up. I thought that was in the first couple of episodes. I could be wrong.
I don't think so.
Okay, when that comes back up, we'll circle back to that. I don't want to ruin that. So I thought Justin Thomas came off poorly. Zach Johnson poorly, which I guess that they'll be in the same episode. So I guess you still got those to come. Did you see the Fitzpatrick one?
No, all I saw was the first. It was the Brooks and DJ one. Then it was the Damon one, I think, or there was one in between. Ricky and DJ was the second one. Brooks and Rory one. Rory, DJ, Ricky two, and then Damon three. Those are the three I've seen.
Yeah, so I think they did two basically on the kind of live fallout, and then they did a Damon Wyndham Clark one, right? I think that was the point. Okay, cool. We'll circle back to that next week then. People that have got kind of 10 minutes into the show and realise that we're not diving straight into DraftKings, I think going forward, I think me and Matt are going to make a bit more conscious efforts, maybe touch upon golf in general. I think that's kind of the plan going forward. We will obviously still do the DraftKings picks for now. What we do in the new season stuff we'll discuss, but we do want to talk about golf because we realise we kind of chat here 10 minutes before we come on, 20 minutes after we come off, whatever. Just enjoying something about golf, so I feel like we should put it into the forum like we are here. So that's why we've kind of done this prerequisite, and it also led into kind of the Scottish Heffler conversation there as well.
I think also another relevant conversation it led into is the fact that none of the top players are playing well, which is really relevant for this week.
Yeah, exactly that. And the next thing with Scottish Heffler, so if it wasn't owned, if the ownership was 30% over 40% or whatever, would you play him? Do you think he's gonna win?
I don't think he's gonna win. I don't think he's gonna win. I think he's absolutely gonna be in the story.
Yeah.
And so you'll be there. Yeah.
No one's ever defended the players in 50 years. The best performance by a defending champion is fifth. That's happened three times. And you have to go back to 2005 for the last defending champion that finished in the top 10 the following year. Wow. So it's pretty damning. So if Scottie Scheffler does come out and finishes third, it's a massive improvement on what we've seen from defending champions and the players.
Tell us on that, though. This is the weakest field you'll ever see in the players.
Yeah, exactly that. But I think... But I also don't know what, like... Is that... I mean, if it's 50 years of it, I suppose it can't be coincidental. But it's not like the Masters where you have all this kind of hosting responsibility and all this sort of stuff. Like... Is it just that it's a volatile golf course?
I think that's what it is. And I think part of it, too, is like it's not always the best player who wins. The last 3 or 4 years, really good players have won. But over the course of the past 30 or 40 years, it seems like the winners are somewhat random, I guess, to where it's not like the best. Like Tiger's not winning every year. If Tiger was winning every year, he'd probably repeat, right?
And this is the thing. So I think when you look at. So the thing that I noted was since they moved back to March in 2019, they overseed it with Poa and all those sort of things. It's been Rory, Justin Thomas, Cameron Smith, Scottie Scheffler, fairly what you'd expect from a Players' Championship over the years. Prior to that is Webb Simpson, Siwoo Kim, at like 100-1, 500-1, Jason Day, Ricky Fowler, and Martin Kaymer. So I think that's had an impact. But we've also, Matt, been Jim Furyk second to Rory McIlroy by one stroke, Lee Westwood second to Justin Thomas by one stroke, and Abba Lahiri second by one choice, Cameron Smith. Like,
those are
great. It could have been completely repeatable again. So, look, Scottie Scheffler won it by 5 strokes, completely dominant last year. And, like, if he did that again, it would be, I would say that's almost his defining achievement if he defends this, even in a weaker field.
Yeah, I mean, it would certainly be relatively unprecedented. I mean, the fact that Tiger didn't do it in his prime shows how. And that's why I'm saying I don't think he's going to win. On paper, does it look like he's going to? Yeah, it does. But
yeah, I think so. So if we don't think Scottie Scheffler is going to win, we're not going to play him at 12-8 about ownerships. So and you've got Rory McIlroy 11-6, Xander Schauffele 11-3, Justin Thomas 10-6, Patrick Cantlay 10-3, Hovland 10-1. Is there too much of a disparity between Rory and Scheffler again?
I don't know about Rory, man. I think
Rory was terrible in the final round last week.
His irons are messed up, and I think what he said to something this week about annulling up or something about he thinks his driver's swing is really good right now, which it is, but he said he thinks whatever move he's making with the driver is causing him to miss left with the irons, and he missed left so many times dead in the lake. He went in the water on 6-3 out of the 4 days this week. I don't think you can win at TPC Sawgrass with your iron play that out of whack.
And he's just extremely volatile here. I mean, 3 missed cuts to start, then 8th, 6th, and 8th, 12th. It looked like he was just one of the more consistent players at the golf course. And then 35th missed cut, 1st missed cut, 33rd missed cut. Like, it's not someone you can rely on, especially with what you showed on Sunday. So that would be the concern. So then we're left with Xander, JT, Cantlay, Hovland. I don't feel great about any of those.
No, I mean, the whole thing is bleak. And I tweeted this on Sunday night when I was really diving in. I was like, I mean, the top players, you have to be in good form to win the Players. It's not like you can show up and just, hey, he's a great player, he'll win. But like, because you have to be in good form. That's one thing. Like, it's really volatile, and there's been a bunch of different types of winners. But the one thing that's remained consistent is the fact that all the guys who have won have been in good form leading up to it. So that's why I'm going to rule out Victor, as much as I love him at this place, and I bet him here every year, and he's a great course history and all these things, but I don't think his game is there right now. So I'll rule him out. Rory, same thing. The iron player isn't there. It's all kind of led me to this guy, and it's not because I absolutely love him so much, but I do think you got to have a good one of the better players here. And for me, it's Cantlay. Always seen him as a fit for the Players. He's gotten better here. He lives in Florida. I like the fact they're using that Poa grass, right? Because he's won at Amex. He's played well at Waste Management. That is similar types of greens. And he's playing decently well. He is a top five finisher at an elevated event, despite how poorly he played on Sunday. So to me, I think he's the best of the bunch.
I think just out of pure feel, I'd probably go to JT. Like, it just feels like one of those times where we keep saying something big's going to happen for JT. And I think he's playing just about well enough that, you know, like inside the top 12 all last week, 12th at Phoenix, 6th at the halfway stage, 6th at Pebble Beach, 3rd at the Amex. Obviously, that one blemish was the miscut at Riviera, and I think a lot of people potentially thought he was going to win. And he's got the 1st and 3rd here. Now, like everybody else, Matt, he's been really volatile here. So it's tough to really feel confident. I would probably go with JT myself.
My question about JT, and I see he's a very popular bet this week, and what I didn't get there was, I hit him here already. So I'm fine with that. But my question is, anyone ever won here twice in 4 years? Mm-hmm. It's got to be no. I mean,
because Woods was kind of, what, 12 years apart?
Hal Sutton was 15, 17 years apart.
Davis Love III was 11 years apart. Fred Couples was even further apart.
It's, what about the Australian?
Elkinson was 6 years apart. So he's about as close as you get, I think.
So this would be two, three years. I'm not betting on that to happen. Same reason I'm not betting Scheffler. Does it look good? JT probably looks the second best on paper next to Scheffler. But for those reasons, I'm going away from both of them.
Is that like a feel thing, though? Like, that's taking out rational thinking, right? And just going by gut instinct.
Yeah, it's... Well,
I know there's a rationale because we just discussed the rationale, but like the idea is you're meant to go, look, let's not like buy into that, like if you're playing that well. But I think the difference is that we're not talking about someone that's playing that well and discounting them. There's, as we've talked about so far on the show, no one's playing that well to overcome trends like that, I guess.
Yeah, and JT had great course history at Genesis and looked like he was going to win that and he missed the cut. So, I mean, he's not the guy I think is rock steady you can trust going into this thing.
Xander Torres is at least impressing again, and he's been solid here. I just don't know if he's fully back and whether his putter is going to hold up in this kind of atmosphere.
Yeah, that was my question as well. I did bet him. I like him because I did want to have a couple guys who are like the true form guys, because again, looking back, you see these guys are in great form when they won, and then for me it's like the week after the Players, you could look back and say, this guy won, I should have seen it. And to me, Zalatoris is the guy. Him and Lowry were the two guys to me that I said, all right, I'm not going to be a dumbass. Take the guys who, if you look back a week later, are going to say we should have known that was coming. And I think Zal is one of them.
I know I tried to talk you into Wyndham Clark before in this similar sort of conversation. But if we're just talking about players, like, I mean, he's first and second in his last four events.
Yeah.
It truly depends what you think Wyndham Clark is. Is he someone that's benefiting from a short period of time where the players are not their best and he's at his very best and peaking? Or is he a player that this is the long term and he's kind of fixed by this, you know, sports psychiatrist, which to be fair, it seems like she's had a massive impact. It's just whether you can slot a 9-7 on him on a course that doesn't necessarily even play to his strengths.
Yeah, I don't love the course for him. I think a lot of it last week was putting too, which obviously he can do, but I don't think this is the right course, right? He's great off the tee, he's great putter. I think the iron play is going to reign supreme here, and I'm not the biggest Wyndham Clark guy, as most people know.
Yeah.
So I think he's going to struggle this week.
Is Hideki fit?
Who the hell? I don't think he even knows.
No. Like, wasn't he hurt during the middle of last week again?
Yeah, I saw that.
Is he hurt, or is he just, does he get to the point where, like, I haven't got it on the range today, let's just pull my back a little bit? Like,
Hideki's been fucking with us for most of his career, right? Pretending he doesn't even speak English when he definitely does. then he says he felt like he shot a 3-over when he shoots a course record at Riviera to win. Like, so who the hell knows with Hideki?
If I knew he was fit, I'd play him.
Yeah, should have won it, or had that first round lead when Kohler canceled it. But does Hideki win when he's the guy who seems like he's going to win?
No, he does it when it's completely against the wall. Like, yeah. And I'm kind of selfishly hoping he's going to go out to a price for the majors. I think he's been sort of kept on side at the moment. I'm hoping he kind of goes out a bit. One person I'm pretty confident about, Max Homer, 9-6. I think the idea that Homer, you should play him on the West Coast and not bother here, obviously has had substance over the years, but he's also played pretty well in Florida, and he found his game a little bit with the irons last week after really struggling with them. Not you know, anything too special, but just played well. And then 13th and 6th in the last 2 years. I think he's got something about him that suggests I could definitely see him as a player's champion.
Yeah, I think so too. He was one of I looked at him early. I decided not to bet him because I chose other guys instead. But he's one of the. I mean, I really think there's like 8 or 10 guys who I could see winning, and the rest would surprise me. He's one of the ones I could see winning.
I feel way more confident about Homer than I do someone like Jordan Spieth or Morikawa, who's right next to him. I don't see either of those. I know Ludvig Hebert is a sensation and someone we can't rule out ever, even though it's his first go, but kind of think it's calling a little bit on him. I think last week, if he was going to do something special again, he'd have done it there, where he's going for the second time and a more suitable course. So I'm going with Burns at 9-2.
Yeah, I mean, those would be my two in that range too. I don't know if I'm playing them, because the way I'm kind of going to build, because I'm going Zalatoris and I'm going Cantlay. And and is Lowry in the nines?
Lowry's 9-1, yeah.
Okay, so those are the three that I'm going with. But if it wasn't them, it would definitely be Homa and Burns. I agree with you on the other ones. They're just not playing well enough, and I don't trust players in bad form here.
I think with Burns, like, people are going to probably look at him and just think, look, he's not jumping off the page statistically, but I just think he's got this kind of, I called it it factor, which again is a little bit of a Ponzi saying, but like, I think he has got it, and someone that I think if he gets in the mix can hang around now. And he went from being absolutely terrible on debut, 81-76, to being the 36th hole leader in 2022, second going into the final round and blew up, and then fifth after round one last year. Like, he can obviously play the golf course. We know he plays well in Florida. I do like Sam Burns at 9-2, and then you obviously like Lowry at 9-1.
Yeah, I love Lowry. I think, I think the fact that we talked about this last week, and I was thinking about going back to him, but the course history was so bad at Bay Hill. I think the fact that he played that well there is a really great sign. He should have won Honda, but the delay, then a Monday finish. Like, I think Shane's the type of guy who wants things the way he wants them. He's not probably great at dealing with things like that.
So obviously I talked you off of Lowry last week. or would certainly oppose the view. And then obviously one of our listeners greatly pointed out that they were probably going to back him based on what you were saying. And then I said about how shitty he was on the course. And look, I make mistakes at times. The one thing I'm pretty fine about is making a mistake about a player that's gone like 3 missed cuts and finished 60th in 4 goes at Bay Hill, and even himself acknowledged that he's been absolutely dog shit at the golf course. So I don't mind being wrong in that instance. The one thing I would say about that suggests that he's playing so well that he can overcome something like that. The second thing I would say is I kind of tweeted that before the final round, sort of saying, wouldn't it be sort of poetic justice if he kind of got the win here after really throwing away the week before where he should have won? And he played poorly through 7 holes. He was like 3 over through 7, and we just felt like, oh, here we go again with Larry. But he did bounce back and kind of make a couple of, I think, made 3 birdies from there on and came in at level par. And I think when Scheffler's playing as well as he is on a Sunday, I don't think anyone looks good in contention. So as much as I was giving Larry a little bit of shit, like, actually level par in Bay Hill when you're in the lead probably normally gets you in a playoff or at least 1 or 2 back. It just Scheffler was so good, I think.
Yeah, and I just think I'm so impressed with the way Lowry's playing. And I think this course he's much better suited to that, right? He's not the longest driver. And yeah. I think his short game can save him here. Look at the players who have won since the switch. You're going to have to scramble Spieth. Even Scheffler's a very underrated scrambler. Then you get Spieth and Cam Smith and JT, all great wedge players. So I think he kind of fits that mold. And his stats have been fantastic. 4 rounds last week. This is per round ball striking. So off the tee combined with approach. 1.95 first round, 2.53 second round, 1.69 third round, and 0.99. So just about a stroke on Sunday, even when he didn't look his best. Around the green, still great. He's gained strokes off the tee, despite the fact that he's not that long. And then the approach was fire at Honda as well, besides that final round. So I just think he's in incredible form right now. This is a course that he's had a lot of success at. And I think he can win.
So yeah, the only problem I have is he's always stroke there. I think he could give me a stroke if I was on him in the final round. That's the issue. Like, it, and I hate it because I actually quite like Lowry. I hate being kind of despondent on him. I was pretty despondent on him. That's the right word. I was quite down on his selection for the Ryder Cup. I felt he was quite fortunate to go there. He kind of did his bit and it was fine. It's weird, his career, like, he was exceptional after 54 holes for most part on the DP World Tour. Then he was terrible last year in Abu Dhabi. He had the lead, didn't he? It was a 4-stroke lead at the US Open, finished second, which you can easily forgive when he then goes and does it in the Open, right? But it's just been that thing. He's just, the last 3 times he's been, you know, within either, you know, leading after round 3 or in contention, he's just been bad. And I can't work out if that's just unfortunate or whether that's just a pattern.
What did he do at Wentworth? How did he win that one?
Got reduced to 54 holes.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a concern. The Portrush thing, obviously, it just felt like lightning in a bottle. So I know he was great that day, but who knows?
So that's the thing. Like, at the end of his career, if he finishes on the one major, which, to be fair, by his standards, I think is actually fine. I don't think it's overachieving, but I think it's solid enough, right? There's been players that have, you know, that are historically better than him, only one major. I do think it would be that. It would be like, look, it was an Open in your country in terrible weather. You just got everything aligned for you that week. Like I think people will levy that. But then he's won the WGC and contended the US Open. It's not like he hasn't done it in the past. So it's strange to me. And it's like, look, him and, you might as well group them both together. Him and Fleetwood are the same player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But right now, he's like what Fleetwood was last year when he was playing really great.
Yeah, right. And it looked like Fleetwood was definitely going to go on and break the duck, and he didn't. And that's what, yeah, it feels exactly the same. Larry doesn't obviously have to break the duck.
But hey, he gets me in that position one more time this weekend, I'll take it.
You can only ask for people to get you there, right? Like, yep. And then you see if they get over the line. We've seen worse players get over the line. So no interest, Cam Young, or any interest in Cam Young?
I've been going back and forth all week. I'm only ultimately deciding against him, although I think a lot of the – I don't think it's the right golf course for him.
That's my thing. Like we always talk about this kind of like you shouldn't rule out big hitters on short golf courses just because they're big hitters on short golf courses. But his outstanding attribute is gone. And in two appearances here, he's not going to look it. If he'd have been 5th and 7th here, you can't ignore it. If he'd been 20th and 17th even, he probably wouldn't ignore it. But he has missed the cut and finished 51st in 2 years. And I know that's hard to just judge people on two efforts, but he's shown that he's ready to contend on the right golf courses straight away, and he just hasn't yet. So I think he would have been way more suited to last week, and he finished 36th, and I don't see that necessarily improving this week. Could be completely wrong, but it's a tough place to break through.
Yeah, just talent-wise, I mean, the field's slightly weaker. I think he could just be there talent-wise. I don't know if he's going to make the putt on Sunday to win a Players' Championship. He hasn't showed us that he can do that yet. But it would not surprise me if he was involved, but to me, I ultimately decided no.
Like, I think it's only Ricky Fowler and Siwoo Kim that have won here over the last 12 years or so without four previous career wins. And that includes kind of Korn Ferry, DP World Tour, etc. I think Ricky had three and went on to have obviously plenty more. And Siwoo Kim was the youngest ever winner at 21. So they're hard to judge those two in that respect. But that kind of leans in even more to the fact that actually you need to be a really experienced winner. Not generally don't have to be old, because I think 33 and younger generally wins here. But like Kuchar, it was a massive moment in his career to win that after struggling to get over the line so many times. I think you need that, a win or two, then being a little bit disappointing, almost like a Finau. This is a good segue into Finau, right? That he took him so long to kind of get those wins, then he's kind of petered off a little bit. I don't think it's a perfect golf course for Finau. He's shown that over the last, you know, 7 years or whatever that he's been here. But you talk about talent level, I'd probably just stack up Finau next to Cam Young and take the $500 discount and try my best with him.
Yeah, I bet him at 65-1. I feel good about it, not because I think he's definitely going to win or anything, but I feel good about
the number.
I don't know. The number's great, and the fact that he's not playing, he's playing better than people are giving him credit for. He's three top 15 finishes, including one top six.
Yeah.
And his ball striking is great. Yeah, he can't putt, but I mean, I'll take that chance.
I think the putting thing will actually be negated. I don't think you have to putt brilliantly here to win, right? Like, I think people have won here by putting brilliantly, like Cam Smith, etc. But I don't think you have to. So I'm not necessarily worried about his putting and not coming good, because I think it can come in flashes. It just, on the face of it, isn't a great golf course for him.
Yeah. No, it isn't. But, you know, on the other hand, since it's the switch to March, the longer hitters have done pretty well. True. So that could help him. And then you want to talk about the overseeded POA now, where the courses that I said it's most similar to surface-wise is the Amex, which he lost in a playoff to Siwoo, I think, and then the Waste Management, which he lost in a playoff to Webb.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very true. And any others that you really like? I think the 8K range is actually quite weak this week.
Yeah. Let's see.
The Fleetwood, so Day, Fleetwood, Thigala, Henley, Sungjae, Corey Connors, Fitz, Kim, Benyam.
Yeah, so I did bet Sungjae at 90-1. I don't completely love it. I just thought the number's too far. He's always a guy.
That's a really weird bet for you.
Yeah, it is.
Is that just purely like he's got to a number I can't ignore?
Yeah, to me, that's exactly what it is. It's a number I can't ignore. I think if he's on his game, like this is a really, really good course for him. He looks like a player's winners to me. And the fact that he finished 18th last week and his stats were really good, I thought was encouraging enough to take a shot at 90, especially with the volatility. I mean, like if he gets there on Sunday, would anyone be that surprised if he's kind of hanging around?
Yeah, exactly that. I can't get behind him. I've been burnt with him too many times recently, but I do see the logic at least. I'm going with Harmon at 7-9 as my kind of next real confident pick. And look, I think the biggest correlation I kind of found was, you know, the Wyndham champion and the Wyndham championship and things like that. He had TBC River Highlands and other Pete Dye course. He had 5 top tens in 6 years there, River Highlands. 3rd and 6th for the Wyndham, 3rd and 8th for the Amex, 7th and 9th for the RBC Heritage. Best ball striking performance in a while last week. I think it was their best iron since the match play last year, and I don't even know how reliable those strokes gained data are for the match play. 3rd in strokes gained approach, 9th in tee to green, 36th hole leader last week at Bay Hill, which is not a golf course I would necessarily have Brian Harmon at. I know people would say the same thing about the Open, but I think you look at his career here, 3rd and 2 8s. I mean, there's been a lot of bad in there in between, but there's been a lot of bad for everybody at this golf course. Like, even the winners have not played well here 3 or 4 years either side of it. So I'm pretty confident that Brian Harman's going to have a good week.
Yeah, I got on at 80-1. I thought that was good. Got to steam down, which I wouldn't touch it now. I'm going to avoid on DraftKings. I got my piece of them there. I'm going to avoid on DraftKings. I think he'll probably be one of the most popular players, especially with all these players who are playing like shit or ahead of him. I mean, you got Fleetwood, and I do want your opinion on him too. Fitz, who's playing like all these guys, even Tom Kim, more expensive than him. So I just think he's going to get really popular for me, so I'm happy with just the bet.
My opinion on Fleetwood, I think he is, you made the point earlier, he is doing what, he is Lowry, but Lowry is doing what Fleetwood did last year, whereas Fleetwood isn't. The one thing I would say, the people that are put off by what happened at Bay Hill last week, I think he's got a very short-term memory. I think he's pretty good at bouncing back from disappointment. So, you know, you've got the win at the Dubai Invitational, you've got the 14th at Dubai Desert Classic. You'd expect him to go over and do that. He's played pretty well at the Genesis. Was that where he had his top 10, right? And then, look, he was terrible last week. He's not getting away from it, 73 and 80. But that is a, that is something that Bay Hill can do to you. He stayed in the area now, and he comes back to TPC Sawgrass, where actually his course form looks good on paper, but it's actually even better, I think, than it looks. So he was 16th after two rounds on debut, finished 41st, just had a, you know, pretty bad weekend. Seventh on his second start, he was inside the top 10 for the final two rounds. He was the leader after round one and two on his third start here, third start here, and then second going into the final round, finished fifth. So inside the top five all week that year. Missed the cut once, and then 22nd when he was first after round one, fifth after round two, and 27th last year where he was fourth going into the final round. So actually, when you look by a round by round basis, Matt, Fleetwood's even more impressive than his numbers suggest.
Yeah, I had him last year at 85-1 here when he was right in the mix, and I've always loved him here. I think it's a great golf course for him. I think it's just absolutely perfect. And I am concerned the fact that I've been on him for a lot of these things on him here in the past, that he's going to come out and play well this week and play great. And I also think he's going to be very low owned, considering pricing was made before I think people realized what he was going to do at Bay Hill. I think I'm not positive, but it does seem like that's baked in. So I'm a little concerned that he's going to be that pivot play that really works out.
Yeah, I do like Tommy Fleetwood. I just have a hard time seeing him win, but I think he can be really, you know, really good in contention.
Yeah, what about Day?
I think I've had enough of Day for the time being. Like, not because I think he's done anything alarmingly wrong, but he was disappointing last week at Bay Hill. Whether that's just, it is Bay Hill, like I've just said about for Fleetwood and stuff like that. Like, he was 10th after two rounds. Should we just be adding that to the fact that he's been inside the top 10 three times this season? Probably. Obviously a winner here, three times in top eight since, or three times in top eight on top of that, and then 19th here last year. Everything suggests that we should probably persevere with Jason Day. I just something about him makes me feel like I need a break.
Yeah, I feel similarly, but I also have that same feeling that I have with Fleetwood, where get off now and he wins something like this and it would be a real pain in the ass.
I think that's a me problem, that Jason Day. If I was giving to the public that are listening, I think Jason Day is a smarter play. I think Siwoo Kim's nicely bubbling under the surface, where I think he can strike at a golf, and like, everyone's going to go, oh, well, it's just because he's won here in the past, but it's not even just that. I just think it's the perfect golf course for him. He's shown that for his whole career. So even if he hadn't won here, even if he just had the 23rd, the 27th, and the 9th that he's had as well, I'd probably like him for this.
Well, he led the field in approach last week by a pretty wide margin. Or at least he did going into Sunday. I didn't check after that, but I was betting some matchups on him and stuff and doing really well. So he hit the ball great last week. So, yeah.
Yeah, I like him. I think Hoagie in the end led the rounds, which we'll come on to. We might come on to now, 7-8. I think Hoagie can contend.
Maybe, but
like, because I just think eventually, and I've been saying this for a few weeks now, maybe I'm just going to keep saying it for three more weeks and nothing's going to happen, but he's hitting the ball better than Scotty Scheffler. He's literally leading the tour in approach. Like,
but how goddamn good does he have to hit it to get in contention?
I that's the problem. Like, how can you play this well and then not contend? But I think this is another one tailor-made for him. Like, he missed a cut on debut, but then finished 30th in his second start, 22nd in his third start, where he was better placed all week. Then he was the 36th hole leader 2 years ago, led us in rounds one and two, and then finished third last year after shooting a course record 62 on Saturday. So I just think for one more week, I'm going to have Tom Hoagie a chance at least, because the iron and tee screen game is just immaculate. He just needs to putt. And I think that could be equalized here.
It could be. I mean, looking at his stats, it looks like what's holding him back is he around the green game, which could definitely hurt here. He's lost strokes around the green in eight of his last nine starts.
He has. He did putt badly as well last week, though, right?
Yes.
Like I think generally speaking, it's the putter that's holding him truly. But I mean, obviously the round green game looks terrible as well. But
he's gained putting six straight events prior to last week.
Interesting. So we're just saying he can't chip.
That's why I don't know what the hell is going on with him. That's what I'm saying is I don't know
but
how.
I think is this one of those clear things with around the green where because he's missing so few greens, when you fail to get up and down once, it just gets massively exacerbated.
I don't know if that's the case. I think it's just what you do from the spot you're in compared to other players in the same spot.
Because off your approach is determined by how far away you are from the hole, right?
Yeah.
So let's say that he missed one green or whatever he's doing. Let's say he's missing two or three greens each week, each round, and he's just not hitting it as close as he should, but he's still scrambling and making the par or whatever.
You're saying that, yeah, those misses would hold more weight in the sample size.
Because he's only had three of them as opposed to it happening eight times.
Yeah, yep, it could be that.
I'm not smart enough to figure that one out. But as you point out there, it's around the green as opposed to putting, which is interesting because I thought it was generally putting and maybe just looked more into last week.
It was really bad last week, yeah.
Yeah, terrible last week. This 7K range is interesting. What are we doing about Scott, Matt?
And that's the story of my life. I think about it when I go to bed at night.
is that just because he's handsome or...?
Well, I do have an erection when I wake up. I don't know if that's due to...
Is it related or is it just science?
I don't know. That's what I've been asking myself. It could be related. It could just be a natural phenomenon. But obviously, this is a good course for him. He's won here. It's been a while. I've struggled to get him right. Even when you do get him right, I don't know what the ceiling is right now. So
that's the problem. Even when you get him right, it's because he's finished seventh. It's not because he's attended. Like, it sucks. Like oh yeah, I've had a good Adam Scott week. Oh wait, he didn't even pay out on each way. Like, it's pretty annoying.
But the price is right this week. But I like the two guys beneath him. I like Mitchell and Hadwin both better than him.
I thought you were gonna say Kirk then.
I don't ever play Kirk, which
you don't like Kirk, do you?
No, but hasn't gone well for me though, so I'll admit that.
Yeah, I mean, I had him first round leader last week, and he finished eighth after round one, and then did nothing. He's not playing that well, and he's not that great at this golf course, so I'm fine to kind of not really talk about him too much. Hadwin's interesting because isn't he one of the only ones that's kind of made the cut here like 3 or 4 years in a row or something?
Yeah, I want to say he was top 10 last year.
13th last year, 9th the year before. So, yeah.
Yeah, and isn't he the type of guy like who just randomly in the mix? Like, couldn't he be like Lahiri a couple of years ago? It's like, yeah, you get Scottie Scheffler and Adam Hadwin in the final group. That wouldn't shock me at all.
No. Do you know the other one? I felt like this last week, and I'm glad it didn't actually turn out to be quite as right as I thought it could be. But Nick Taylor was 12th last week. Remember I was saying about I thought he was cheap for, you know, the way he's been playing? Like,
yeah.
I would probably levy that same point to Taylor. And he's 6'9".
Yep.
Like, yep. I know Hadwin's more reliable because of the course form and things like that, but even like Taylor's got a 16th here, and that was basically all he had. He had one good week at Bay Hill, and then he's turned it into a good week this year. And I just think he's playing differently, like, since he won that Canadian Open. And 16th, when he had three straight rounds of 69 or better here, and then 48th, where he was 11th after round one as well. He doesn't seem to have, like, he had one disaster round here where he shot, well, two disaster rounds here where he shot 79. But even the year he shot 79, he was 67 after round one. I think Taylor's interesting. I know we're skipping a whole range there, but we might as well group the Canadians together.
Yeah, I think he is. I don't play Nick Taylor. I never have, never will. So I get it. And there's a lot of guys in this area I like. Like, I like a lot of players around here. I think, like I said earlier, when I said the top guys aren't playing well, but then you get down to the point where it's like a lot of the guys that are playing well that I really like, I have a hard time envisioning winning a players, especially with the winners we've seen since the switch to March. So Hadron's one of them. And then I mentioned Mitchell. I mean, Mitchell's hitting the ball great.
Yeah. Is this the problem with he's not going to be able to hit the driver much?
It could be, but it's a much bigger discount. And he's also, his approach numbers are great. And he's a great putter too. He's won the Honda, which I think there's some similarities here. So him, and then at 7K, Cam Davis, who loves Pete Dye courses.
So Cam Davis was very close to me, not close to me, that would be strange, but he was sixth last year after two miscuts at this golf course. And I think he's playing, like, I feel like at the start of the season, his form was overrated. Now I think it's kind of gone the other way. I think he's been like, oh, he's had a couple of mediocre like tournaments and everyone's kind of jumped off. Like, he was second after round one at Riviera, 11th after round two, and then finished 49th. Then he finished 18th last week, which I think was solid. He's not playing a lot of golf, and I think that's why people are not necessarily honing on him in the way they normally would. So I think Cam Davis is definitely a smart play, sixth in approach last week.
He's one of my favorite players on the board because of that. He also plays great in big events. He was good at the Players last year. He was third, I think, at the PGA Championship last year. And then you get the Pete Dye correlation, which is great. So actually, that's a good segue into me because I'm not writing anything this week because I just don't feel like it for the first round leader. But the guys I just mentioned, those three, I bet four first round leaders all at 80-1. The fourth I'll get to in a second, but the first three were Hadwin, Mitchell, and Davis.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I mean, he's got the Amex form, right, where he's third there, sixth here as mentioned, seventh at the Heritage, seventh at the Wyndham, which provides a lot of crossover.
Mm-hmm.
15th at the Wyndham. Yeah,
he just bucked ass at Pete Dye.
Yeah. I mean, he probably does a lot of that in his life, I imagine. But
yeah,
Cam Davis, great. I like Aaron Van Roy in 7-3.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell me why no. Other than you don't think he's gonna win, which is pretty obvious at 7-3, and it's Barrett Van Rooyen. But why like that? Yeah, no, like he can't make up a lineup.
Yeah, I just. I mean, there are times when I feel like, and I almost feel the same way about Taylor. And I felt that way about Kirk in the past. I think it's a bias I have towards certain types of situations where I feel like we're trying to project something in the future that's already happened in the past. And it's not like a great player where his form's great and you want to play him because that's what top players do. It's like a player in this tier where they flashed and they flashed and they flashed and they these great results and these great results.
And then they die.
Yeah. And I just feel like I want to be 1 week before, not 1 week after.
So the thing my counter to that would be that I was on him in the Mexico Open when he was 40-1. He led after round one and finished eighth. I then had no interest in him at the Cognizant, the Honda, as I like to call it. But then he finished second there, final round 63. Carries it on 25th. Again, I'm not really interested in him at this point. I think it's like got to end at some point. And then you look at his one and only start of the players. He finished 13th. He was third after 36 holes. He gained 11 strokes on approach. Now, I know that's not going to happen again, but the idea that he's obviously playing well as it is already, he's done that. And then the thing that really tipped me over the edge, a couple of things tipped me over the edge. Two times going into the RBC Heritage final round, he's got a chance to win. Another Pete Dye design, went into Sunday in 2022, one shot back, 2021, two shots back. Didn't obviously get the job done, which is a massive disappointment. And you would say that there were slightly elevated events from what he's won, so maybe that's just what he is. But you add those Pete Dye things to his second at the PGA National, 10th at the Valspar and 13th on debut here, and you've got all this Florida form as well. It just feels cheap on a guy. Like, everyone was screaming about how cheap he was at 6-6 last week, and obviously he's now gone up to 7-3. But I just think, he's good. I think he's playing well. I think he's back to kind of what DB World Tour fans hoped he would be when he made the move. And yeah, I'm willing to give him another shot.
Yeah, I think what just happened right there with you and I talking is the reason why people should listen to the show. I think that's, I think your counterpoint to what I said was fantastic. You made a great case for him. Not enough to convince someone like me. But
yeah, you're still going to go, yeah, at the end of it. But that's fine. Like, If we agreed, that would make a boring show, right? Like, I don't want to agree on everything. My idea is not, when I'm offering that counter argument, it's not even necessarily to get you to change your mind. It's
right.
Listeners hear the other side of it, right? And someone can, basically the guy that tweeted us last week and said that they were going to play Larry because they're listening to you and then I talked them off of it, probably listened to Matt. And then when Van Rooyen finishes 67th, you can say I'm shit for 2 weeks in a row.
No, but I think you that argument right there was really, really strong. One of your stronger ones. So I think most people listening should probably go with that. And I think a lot of people like him this week anyway, so I'm sure they probably.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's a pretty low opportunity cost. I'm not trying to talk up a 40-1 shot, right? Justin Rose looks cheap, but we've been down this road too many times.
He will be -5 after like 7 holes and then he'll miss the cut.
Yeah.
I just don't trust him.
Paul Keegan. Yeah, I can't trust him. He will be the first round leader at Augusta.
Yeah. There's a guy in the 6Ks that's winning. So is Rose at Augusta? Good question. I don't know.
I think he is. I'm pretty sure he is. Okay, before you get to your guy that's winning in the 6K, which I've got a pretty good idea. I know who you're talking about. Doug Gim.
Fuck Doug Gim.
I feel like I'm going to try and make one of the stronger arguments again. Okay. Doug Gim, his last 4 starts, 13th, 12th, 8th, 16th. So already on the face of it, pretty good, right? I mean, you should be looking at a player like that anyway. First start here, he finished 29th. He was third going into the final round. A year after that, second going into the final round, finished 6th. I know he's not going to win. I know that he's going to throw himself into the water as soon as he gets a chance to win. I think he can finish 17th.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. He'll probably be really popular. And just to add to your point, I think he was in the mix at Waste when I remember when Brooks won. I think he was in the final group. So we're talking about those green services, so that makes sense too.
And I'm guessing, without even looking, yeah, 5th at the Amex, obviously Pete Dye, 15th at the Travelers. So he likes Pete Dye.
I would love to see the answer to this, but it just would take so much work. I think since the switch in the green change, I think a lot of the players who played Amex well in those 4 years have played well at the Players as well. I'd be willing to.
Yeah.
Both Pete Dye, both St. Green Surfaces, and you get a lot of these Gims and guys like that. And also, I mean, he's not that I'm a huge go by the model guy, but he's way up there in a lot of the stats that I'm looking at. I want to say he's 10th in my model. And his stats are incredible across the board. So obviously, I can't fault anyone for going there.
So Doug Gim is someone that, if he appears top 10 in your model, you're questioning your model. Is that what you're saying?
I'm a feel guy, and I do the model stuff, and I sometimes I use it as a tiebreaker. I know a lot of people like to use stats and numbers and stuff, but I've always been feel. But it's just good to look at, the model will often lie though.
Yeah, I definitely go by feel way much more, and there's probably an argument I should go a little bit more statistical in this day and age, especially in this format. But I don't. So here we are. Give us the guy that's winning, Matt.
Billy Horschel.
Yeah, I had a theory this was going to be your pick.
Yeah, I really can see him winning. He's so, a lot of the guys who have won the Players are like accomplished big things in the sport, even if at the time when they won, they weren't like the best player in the world. But Billy has big wins. He's won a tour championship, he's won at Wentworth. He's done a lot of big things in the game. So I think he fits that mold. I think he's great in Florida, great iron player. He's almost won the Wyndham multiple times. He's great on Pete Dye courses. 4 of his 7 PGA Tour wins have been on Pete Dye courses. Look back at the past year or two, all the events he's played well are the events that correlate to this one. You got the Wyndham, and then Honda, in his last start, he finished 9th, and his stats were great. It wasn't just putting. And he is a guy who can putt his way to a win. So I think at 200-1 or 6,600, this is a guy who, and he's still 37, he's not like he's 45, like he's, I think he can win this.
Yeah, he's that Webb Simpson type, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
The Webb looked like he was gone at the game. Webb had snapped his putter over his knee because that was the only way that he could change his game. the difference with Webb is he'd won a major, right, and then kind of gone downhill, whereas Billy hasn't done that. But fourth at Marion, right, in 2013, I think, didn't he hit every green in regulation wearing octopus pants? I think that's an achievement in itself.
And he won the Tour Championship. That was a real event.
Yeah, and like I think people forget, like, because two of his wins was Zurich Classic. Like, the first Zurich Classic he won was the actual event, right? Like, it wasn't a pairs event, and it was on the Pete Dye and two FedEx Cup events. Like, it's huge. And even Memorial last time, like, it's a big event to win. He won it by 4 strokes. So I think there's this fine line, because people find him irritating, and I completely understand it. He doesn't get the credit he deserves. There's also this kind of fine line that he just can't quite reach the next level. And this win, like, if he was to win this week, that would be that bridge. Like, because he's been so good, and he actually contended in that. That was his first or second US Open appearance. He'd played in 2006, probably as a, whatever, 15-year-old or whatever. But, like, that was his first real major start, and he finished fourth. And then he's not had a top 10 in the major since. He's barely had a top 20. I think he's had one top 20 in a major since finishing fourth at the US Open.
But this is just such a different test than a major, right? The field is good and stuff, but...
Yeah, like it is. And I think that's the other thing that people... And I'll just jump in there. And I think that's what people... Because I'm going to check myself on this. Like, because people call it the fifth major, I think people treat it like a major event, and it's not. It's just kind of... It's not a resort course, but it's that short type of course that allows this kind of playing, and that will suit him. And it just so happens that there's a load of money at the end of it and big status. I don't think any of that necessarily puts me off. He's just so hard to predict, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but if you look at his courses over the past 18 months, he's been relatively easy to predict. And last thing I'll say, and again, he's 6,600, he's 200-1. So if he sucks, so be it. But if you look back at his career and you say, yeah, Billy Horschel won a Players, would that surprise you?
No.
Then that's where I'm at with a guy who's that low price and that high on the odds board. So
I get it. It's one of those ones where down here you're slimmer pickings, and you realize that you've got a class player down there. I think in terms of real guys, that's pretty much it for me. Mm-hmm. The one person I wanted to point out, because he's so cheap, is Martin Laird at 5,400. I joked about this on Twitter, and it was generally a joke, because I like to write things when people do something amazing and kind of downplay it. But Laird has finished second and fifth at this golf course, and he's back-to-back top tens. Like, I think Martin Laird can get you through the cut. And at 5,400, if you're desperate to build your lineup, I think that's a good way to do it.
I'd rather play Martin Kaymer than Martin Laird.
Well, you can't, because Martin Kaymer isn't here, Matt. So
I bet him every year here. And
what, Martin Kaymer or Martin Laird?
Martin Kaymer.
Okay.
So, no, I can't bet him. But, yeah, I guess.
I guess. That was one of those ones. You're not taking the argument. I get it. I mean, I didn't make a massively strong argument, so I understand. Just one player that's caught my eye a little bit in recent weeks, and I'm late to the party a little bit, which is funny because we've just been talking about Party Marty. Ekavaria. Is he good now?
Nico.
24th, 21st, and 15th his last 3 weeks. Is it just the stars of aligns? He's been able to play Mexico Open, Puerto Rico Open, and just happens to finish well at the Honda in between. Like, is that what has happened?
Yes, that is what happened. That is what's happened. But I do like him as a player, and but I've done this experiment on non-Aspalum courses, and he's disappointed every single time. His stats are really very bad. I know they didn't have any at Puerto Rico last week where he played well. Can he make the cut? Sure. Is this course similar to Honda and these other coastal events? Maybe it's not just the Aspalum. Maybe it's everything, which would fit this. And that's kind of why I looked at Brandon Wu a little bit. Who is set 54, 5,600. I don't like him, but I think if you have to jam somebody in here, I'd rather go there. But I do like Nico as a player. I hope despite the allegations, I hope he performs well at some of these other courses.
You're not playing Matt Kuchar?
I think he's just 44 going on 80.
He's been 24 going on 80, though, hasn't he?
He just looks so old. Like, it's
he's
every time
always looks old. Like, he looks the same now as he did when he was contending in the Masters.
Yeah, but just the way he picks the ball out of the hole, it's like he's gonna croak over and die.
He still doesn't even look, but he even his swing looks old. Like he has to hover. He's like, I hate that. That gives me the ever since I noticed it when I was on him at the Masters, like when he just hovers that little hybrid and then hits it. I mean, look, the guy's won X amount of money on the PGA Tour. I don't know who I am to criticize, but it's fucking horrible to watch.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm probably out for the time being. He's not. If he shows flashes, will I play him at Wyndham or Heritage or something? Sure, but I just think I'm out for now.
I'm assuming he's another one that will be 3 under through 4 and then miss the cut.
Yeah. Molinari's playing. How's Molly even in this field? I don't know.
But Aaron Baddeley's in this field, and I've been talking about Aaron Baddeley for a couple of weeks now, but this field is really bad.
Oh, it's awful.
Ben Taylor, Tyson Alexander, Callum Tarran, David Lipsky, Camilo Vijayguess, Ches Reavy, Zach Blair, Ryan Moore, Hayden Buckley, Harry Hall, Kevin Sheldon, all 5K.
Yeah, it's all shit. Not much we can say. The one thing I do want to think about out loud, I haven't even thought about this yet, so I don't know my answer.
Okay.
So we talked about the last few. There's been some real old dudes, Westwood and Furyk, both battling with elite players. Like, who could do that rant? Could it be Hoffman this year, maybe?
He's got a second here. No, he hasn't. That's second recently. Phoenix. He's got a 17th here.
But there's going to be some random old guy in there. I mean.
So it's not going to be Cooch, no?
We're
pulling that one out.
I think even older, like, I think they have to be eligible for the Champions Tour.
Who do we even have? Aaron Baddeley's got to be. Steve Stricker's there, 5,200. He is on the Champions Tour.
Okay, he could be the guy. I mean.
So last week it was European midgets, and this week it's retirement home.
Yeah, I want somebody who, like, can't even wipe their own ass right now.
I mean, Steve Stricker can't be far off. He's been like that for 10 years.
Is Vijay playing?
He's not. But it's a shame after all the Scotty Scheffler talk that we're not getting Vijay, Scotty Scheffler down that stretch.
I was thinking, it was Furyk, Rory, but I was thinking Vijay was like, when was Vijay contending? And it was just 2 weeks before that was the Rory and Furyk. It was Vijay was like in the final group at the Honda. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do remember.
He was like six.
Yeah.
That was great.
Yeah. Good old days. I miss DJ Singh.
Oh, he's the best. I love him.
I bet VJ Singh in the PGA Championship, I'm going to say it was. And let's say it was, I don't know when it was, 2012 maybe. And there was like a lightning strike or something happened and they all got caught off the court. The guy was going to win. The guy was legit like storming through. Playing his best golf. It was the 2012 PGA Championship, and Vijay Singh was tied for the lead after the second round with Carl Pettersson, and he was tied with Rory in the third round going into a weather delay, and then he just collapsed.
Yeah.
That's my last great Vijay Singh memory. That was 1 year after I was legally allowed to place a bet.
Well, my great memory was at the Honda Classic when he was in the final group. And have you seen him with his evil beard?
No.
He looks like the he has an evil look to him. It's like the guy from Jim Carrey plays him, A Series of Unfortunate Events.
Oh yeah, Lemony Snicket. Yeah.
He looks like a Fijian that guy.
This guy dropped off so bad.
He peaked so old. He was like 34 when he became good, so then all of a sudden he was like 55 out of nowhere.
But everyone just thought he was just going to absolutely tear up the majors, right? And on the Champions Tour, just didn't.
Yeah, so I guess maybe he isn't contending this week.
He's not even playing, so he's definitely not contending this week. I think we've got to the point where we talk about players that aren't even playing. We can probably call it a day, Matt. Any more lasting thoughts on the players?
I hope it. I mean, I have high hopes this week. I'm excited, just like you said you were at the beginning. I do worry it's just going to feel very similar to these last few events, and I hope it has that extra buzz that we might not get until the majors again. So I'm hopeful for it. I'm excited for it, but I really hope it delivers because we need it to.
We need weather to cooperate. We need like just a good. I don't know whether I'd want to see Rory versus Scheffler. I want to see Scheffler versus Kurt Kitayama. Like I don't really care which way does it, as long as they're both dueling. Like I think it's absolutely fine.
I want to see Scheffler in the lake is what I want to see.
Well, because he's blind, because he's
no, I want him out of here. I just want so, I want like an intriguing event where there's a lot of great players at the top, but maybe not him, and maybe like because I don't think he's as good for golf as people are making it seem. He's
boring.
Like, yeah,
which is completely not an insult. So here it's the same thing against levels, but doesn't Patrick Cantlay get catch way more heat for that than Scotty Scheffler does?
Yes, absolutely. And
Scheffler is boring as fuck. There's nothing exciting about Scotty Scheffler. But he just wins.
Well, I think the Cantlay thing is better because like people hate Cantlay. The thing with Scheffler is people he doesn't inspire any emotion of any type, which is that's why he's boring. Whereas Cantlay, a lot of people hate him, which is great. Like what about a Cantlay versus Spieth final round or like a
or where he's playing really slow and he takes his hat off and throws it into the 17th.
Yeah, I think we're missing I really think part of it, we're missing these villains and missing these storylines where people are rooting against somebody. Like everyone hates Patrick Reed, but what if you gave five live players exemptions and all of a sudden he's in this event and it's Patrick Reed versus Scotty Scheffler and so I mean there's probably millions of people watching it.
I think that's the thing now, like even with Patrick Reed gone and out of the picture, right, people still want to talk about Patrick Reed because they'll say when Wyndham Clark had a dodgy like drop, they're like, oh, Patrick Reed's back, and it's like you're still talking about him and he's gone. And then like this week it'll be, do you remember when last week Bryson drove the green? And like it, you still talk about these guys, and then it'll be, you know. So yeah, I do get it. I think you're right. I think
in Dubai, I remember that it was like 4 o'clock in the morning and I set an alarm because I wanted to see Rory and Reed towards the end when that was the whole week of the tea incident.
Yeah, yeah.
It's good for golf. I mean, I know people hate these guys, but great. I want you to hate them, and I want it to be fun to watch.
What's the Westwood one when had he just lost to Bryson and then he lost to JT? Is that what happened?
He lost to Bryson at API.
And then he lost.
Who did he lose? He lost to the players.
It's a JT, right?
Yeah, was that? Yeah, so I guess.
So was that in the same 2 week stretch?
Yeah.
But that's what you need. Like you need someone like that that's just going to come through and put a couple of big weeks together and make it more exciting. Like it.
Charlie Hoffman, maybe.
Maybe. I mean, to be honest, like Shane Lowry doesn't. He's not old enough to fit that bill, but like. It would fit it would be a really interesting story to see Shane Lowry overcome the demons of the last couple of weeks with a really commanding performance down the stretch.
Yeah, and he's a notable player, right? He won an Open. He's been in Ryder Cups. Like, I think that would be good.
Yeah. My dream scenario, if my players don't win this week, is that Finau does it. For some reason, I just want Finau to get back and get a big win. I love the guy.
I certainly would love it. He is one of my players this week, so that'd be great.
There we go. Matt, let's just very quickly summarize kind of our top plays. So 10K and above, I'm going with JT. Are you sticking with Patrick?
Yeah, Cantlay.
Cool. 9K range, I am fully invested in Sam Burns at 92, although Homer I like if the ownership doesn't get too out of kilter.
I love Zhao, although I'm starting to worry a little about him, and I like Lowry too.
8K, I really don't like the 8K range, so I'll go Siwoo Kim at 8 flat.
I'm going Finau, and yeah, Finau, so I'll go with.
I think I'm pretty high, I'm much higher on Fleetwood after the last couple of podcasts than I was before coming in, so I don't mind the Fleetwood shout in that range.
So he just stuck to us and now you're on him again?
Yeah, maybe. I think I just have like sympathy for these people. Eric Van Rooyen, player of the week for me at 7,300. I think he's cheap, but I like Hoagie at the top at 7,800 and Brian Harman at 7,900. So I do like the 7K range.
I do like it as well, although I like three completely different guys. I like Hadwin, Mitchell, and Davis.
There you go. You can't say we didn't give you a spread of players in the sevens. Doug Gim, despite your protests at 6,800. And Martin Laird at 5,400 if you're really desperate. I think lower down the board.
Really desperate.
Yeah.
I get Billy, potential winner here. And no one else, really.
I do think the Nick Taylor thing's interesting at 69. I think he's overlooked a bit.
It's a good price, yeah.
Yeah. Matt, that's it. I enjoyed that. Always enjoy catching up with you about golf. I think going forward, as we said, we're going to try and transition into this kind of more general golf discussion, which I think this kind of lent itself to. And maybe we don't need to make a drastic change. Or maybe we can just do it incorporated in this. So maybe we'll just get some feedback on that. Like, do you want us to do an extra show where we talk about golf in general? Do you want us to sack off the DraftKings and just talk like this just the whole way through? And you can kind of make your decisions from that. Like, give us some feedback on thoughts and things like that. We're pretty open. I think the DraftKings give you a point of entry, right, and a point of, you know, focus, and then kind of creates a discussion.
Yeah, I think all that's well said. I do like just talking golf in general without having to fit these guidelines. But I will say this. Our show does usually, I think, really have great, interesting stuff and just general golf talk that just goes along with it. And I think advertising it as the Players Championship DraftKings show is going to get less people to click on it than really should.
Right. Yeah.
Because I think you could just listen to the, anyone could listen to the show. It doesn't matter if you're playing DraftKings or not. You could get a lot out of this.
That's my concern. Like that, like almost underselling it. And that's not stab at people that enjoy it. Like the people here that have come here that listen to it, we really appreciate the fact that you do want to listen to it for a DraftKings show, right? Like that was our target audience, and we don't want to get away from that necessarily. So if that was to alienate the people that are already here, that would be disappointing. But I do think you could still get the same what you need out of it, I guess. Maybe the answer is just to add another show, Matt. And then we just see, like, time constraints are terrible, but maybe we do it in the summer. Maybe around major season, we have more conversations and just test the waters. I don't want to abandon it, but I also do think that we are underselling it by not selling it as a general golf chat.
Right, because it's a DraftKings show, but it's more than a DraftKings show. So one thing I'll ask people, I know feedback is tough for you, but if you can just even say, you know, what you like about the show in the comments, or parts that you like, or the fact, just anything, if you like it, just give a positive so other people can see that it's more than just 8,900. I like this player. 75, like, it's more than that. So I think it would be helpful for people to kind of be a little more vocal on social media to kind of help spread the word about the show.
And I'm also self-aware that if people do generally just want, this player is good at 8,900, good at 7,300, and this is why, because of the ownership discount, there's people that are better than that than me. I think you are generally quite good at that, and that's why I had to kind of lean on you for that side of things. But like, I think I've got a good understanding of reading between the lines and feel and kind of the story element of it, and telling the kind of, you know, outlining what happened and creating discussion, whereas the actual DraftKings deep dive is better done by people that win every week.
Yeah, I completely agree, and this is, it should be entertaining to listen to, and at the end of the day, you're making your own decision, so you can take this, take some things from it, don't take some things from it. But I don't want to toot our horn here, but I do think this is becoming, in the grand scope of things, an underrated show. That's all I'm going
to
say.
Yeah, no, I agree. If we compare ourselves to an underrated golfer, who is that?
Huh? Would it be Vijay Singh of the
Vijay Singh? I feel like it. Maybe that's a stretch, because this guy won like so many tournaments. Like, like he's underrated, but he shouldn't have been underrated. Like,
well, exactly.
Well, that's true, I guess. Yeah, I like it. Vijay Singh. I'm happy to be compared to Vijay Singh. The guy's a legend.
Me too. Go Vijay.
Go Vijay. I think that's it. I think that's a good discussion. But yeah, I think it's just one of those ones where I think we just want feedback from it, just to know what direction we want to go in. And look, if people do want the DraftKings stuff over and over again, that's fine. We'll keep doing it. Like, we enjoy doing it enough. Like, it's not an issue. It's just maybe we think about adding more or DraftKings. Maybe it's just changing the SEO stuff and it's DraftKings and discussion or whatever. Like, there's different ways to do it. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, and if you have any negative feedback too, just put it in your notes app and then leave it there.
Yeah, leave it somewhere else. I don't give a shit. Like,
yeah.
Well, to be fair though, I'd almost at this point, like, the reviews are so stagnant. I think people, like, some people listen to it and love it and don't really say anything until you say,
I think that's most people, yeah.
Then there's one guy that gave me a negative review for coughing once because I was recording when I had COVID, so fuck me for trying to serve the people. So I was almost dying. Like, so had that. But also, like, I literally do not mind criticism. Like, that's the only way you get better. Like, I've had people do it before in the past where they've said, like, actually, you say this too much or you ramble on too much before you get to this point, whatever. And it's actually helped. I'm absolutely fine with it. So if there is negative feedback, give it. Just don't put it on the, like, actual app store because that would kill us.
No, constructive criticism is fine.
Yeah, send it to our DMs and we'll figure it out. Matt, thanks, bud. Always good.
Final thoughts. I need to give my son's picks to win.
Yes, you do.
He was on the air with not on the air. He was talking with us before, and
just. I mean, he was almost on the air because I was just going to hit record straight away.
It would have been good. It would have been funny. But he is on. He's 4 years old. He's on Benion and Hideki this week.
And to clarify, when we asked him who was going to win, he just said Ben. we had to infer slightly, and then we realized that the background was that Matt had been cheering on Benny in a bet. He lost in the playoff, and 4 year old Luca has remembered this, which is still blows my mind, right? And then the second time we asked him was, and he literally said Hideki probably better than 90% of adults. So if either of those two guys win, then Luca's on next week.
There we go. You know what? I want to put $5 on each of them, and I'll buy him some. He wants some Pokemon toys if they win.
I'll send him some Pokemon toys if they win. Are they easy to get in your, like?
On Amazon and stuff, they're usually pretty easy.
Great. Cool. Yeah. Matt, thank you as ever. We'll catch up during the week to kind of keep touch on our results. And then we've got some Masters to look forward to, not so far away. So looking forward to preparing for that.
Great stretch. Just have a good week.